Hello and welcome to the Wavelength podcast, brought to you from the newsroom of Tradewinds. We're a team of dedicated maritime journalists and editors, and this podcast is about giving you updates and insights into weekly news of the shipping industry. My name's Craig Eason, and I'm your host and longtime maritime journalist and broadcaster. And in this week's programme, we start in New York, where it seems shipping has become something of a hot ticket on the New York Stock Exchange. Then we hop over to Copenhagen in Denmark, where it seems that there's a continuing story of revolving doors among some of the city's leading shipping firms in the last couple of weeks. And then we head off to China, where our indications are that there's been a surge in new building orders to bolster the Chinese and even the Korean shipyards. But is this a febrile madness by cash-rich ship owners and a reset about to happen?
This week's episode is brought to you with the support of Lloyd's Register. For more information, visit their website, lr.org.
It's wake-up time for investors on the New York Stock Exchange. That there's now some decent pickings amongst the shipping companies. Last week, BW Group-controlled Hafnia made good on a long-term promise to head to the Big Apple, and Hafnia CEO Michael Skov had the honour of standing on the New York Stock Exchange's very famous balcony and ringing the opening bell ahead of trading. Tradewinds New York correspondent Joe Brady was on the trading floor watching things unfurl, and he joins me now in the Wavelength virtual studio. Hi, Joe. So, what can you tell me about the reasons for Hafnia going to New York for what turns out to be its second IPO?
Hi, Craig. Well, yeah, it was a big day for Hafnia. They had sort of an elaborate reception and bell-ringing ceremony as they brought what's about a $3.6 billion to $3.7 billion market capitalization company to the New York Stock Exchange. In talking with Michael Skov after the ceremony, he made clear that they'd been interested in New York for some time, going as far back as 2015. When they first investigated it, the markets didn't cooperate for them at that time. They wound up listing in Oslo in 2019. But they continue to be attracted by New York, and what really has proven to be its greater, deeper trading liquidity as opposed to what can be had on the Oslo exchange. Although certainly that bourse has worked out pretty well for them as they built scale, but they see maybe a deeper and broader investor base available to them in New York, and that has a lot to do with their move.
As I said earlier, there seems now to be a small pool of tanker companies on the New York Stock Exchange.
Yes, and in fact, it used to be pretty slim pickings on the product tanker side. There was a period back from, say, 2010 to 2013 when really Scorpio Tankers was the only significant outlet available to investors who wanted to play in that space. And in fact, they, in 2013, Ardmore Shipping of Ireland attempted and successfully completed a fairly modest $140 million IPO. And Scorpio made things very difficult for them to achieve that by conducting their own follow-on shares issue that was even larger at exactly the same time as Ardmore was moving. So it was not a very friendly environment at that time. Now with Hafnia making their move, there will be more than $10 billion in combined market cap available to investors who want to look at Scorpio Tankers, Torm, Ardmore, or now Hafnia as options. And indeed, Robert Bugbee, this time around, I did speak to him after the Hafnia event, and he was quite welcoming of Hafnia and Michael Skov, and insisting that now it's all a big team and they're all teammates together in the tanker club.
I know that Skov and Bugbee have some sort of history, having been involved in some deals in the past.
Yeah, they have. In fact, Skov was an executive of Torm. I think he was chief operating officer at the time. when Torm and TK got together in 2007 and bought out Bugbee's old OMI Corp, the company which he was president under Chief Executive Craig Stevenson, bought them out for $2.2 billion. At what proved to be kind of the peak of that tanker market. So I think that was one that really went Bugbee's way, you could say. And then years later, in 2019, Scorpio Tankers was in a little bit of a liquidity challenge, high debt, a little low on cash reserves. And they sold their entire LR1 fleet of 12 tankers to SCOV and Hafnia, thereby solving some of their liquidity issues, but also making Hafnia an even more powerful market player, especially in the LR1 sector.
And finally, do we see the New York Stock Exchange becoming a competitive exchange for listed shipping companies? We've seen that two more BW-related companies have submitted papers for listing there, namely BW LPG and BW's offshore wind business, Cadeler. How does this look then for other shipping exchanges, notably the Oslo Exchange?
Well, I think it's a little bit nuanced in, you know, it needs to be pointed out that in the relationship between the Oslo Bourse and the New York Stock Exchange, Oslo has always had somewhat of a role as an incubator for companies that maybe, you know, takes them through their adolescence at least, but maybe companies that wanted to live their adulthood on the New York Stock Exchange because of its greater trading liquidity, just a lot more options, a lot more investors. So what we have seen, however, is that seems to have accelerated over the past year with companies moving out of Oslo. And it's not just been the BW companies, but there have been people like Himalaya Shipping and Okeanis Tankers and Cool Company. So we've had companies with different sponsors who have also sought out a dual listing and a second home in New York. There have been some things postulated as to why that might be, ranging from concern about the stability and strength of the Norwegian kroner to whether Oslo still is quite as nimble as it used to be as a market. It was always known as quick to market and fairly light on documentation. Now, with ownership by the Euronext exchange, there may be some perception that some of that nimble aspect advantage in Oslo is not quite what it used to be. So it's a bit of a complex and nuanced picture there, I think. But yeah, there probably is scope for more companies to make that type of move.
Joe Brady in New York. Thank you.
Sure, Craig.
Now, let's hop over the pond into Europe, Copenhagen, Denmark. Something that's had our website buzzing for the past 6 weeks has been some of the personnel changes at bulker operators in Denmark. Earlier this week, there was another notable departure when Christian Winther Christiansen announced that he was stepping down as Norden's commercial chief. Holly Birkett is just back from Copenhagen, where these departures were the talk of the town. So Holly, why does it feel like so many people in Denmark seem to be moving jobs right now?
Oh, yes. Hi, I'm back. Yes. Yeah, it's transfer season in Denmark, I guess. And it certainly does feel like a lot of people are moving around right now. So everyone's just had their bonuses for the last year. And now people, I guess, are starting to think about the next steps in their career. And also in Denmark, you have to give very little notice to leave and start a new job, which makes it very easy for people to move around. But if we can just start at the beginning and just catch people up in case people aren't familiar. So really this narrative, it started during the first week of March, on my birthday, coincidentally, when the Panamax desk at Norden, they all got up and they joined George Economou's Classic Maritime, which until now has been an owner and operator of Capesizes. More on that in a minute. And shortly after that, Lena Lund Clausen, she also resigned as Norden's head of Supermax in the Atlantic, and she joined the bulker operator Boltmouth. This week, we've had Niels Josefsen announcing that he's retiring as CEO of Lauritz and Bulkers. And I also broke the news that Anders Farah has made an abrupt exit from the bulker operator Union Bulk, in which he was a partner and co-founder. So the jobs market in Copenhagen is getting pretty interesting right now. But of course, the big news this week was the departure of Christian Winther Christiansen from Norden, who's stepping back from corporate life. I spoke to Norden's CEO, Jan Renbo, this week, and here's what he had to say about the so-called exodus from Norden.
We've had a very, very successful period for Norden over the last few years, and I think that you know, it's not unusual, you know, for some of our leaders to sort of reassess, you know, what are sort of next steps in their career. Also, remind you that in FST alone, so in this unit alone, we are almost 300 employees. For Norden, we have over the last 2 years had 94% retention. So I know that this is getting a lot of attention and focus, but I think the fact that we are replacing Christian internally also shows that we have just a strong pool of talent in Norden. And sometimes, yes, people will leave, but this has also been an opportunity for us to sort of reassess the structure we have.
Right, so there you have it. But Christian, as I understand it, he's been working on his own succession plan for some time. That's why his role is being split between Rasmus Saltoft, who was head of Handysize Bulkers Worldwide and will become head of Dry Cargo, and Søren Tobel Nielsen, who will remain as head of Tankers. So best of luck to Rasmus and Søren in their new roles. In the meantime, the remaining Supermax team has stepped in to replace the Panamax team at Norden, which leaves a bit of a gap on Supermax. But Jan told me that the company is trying to take a more joined up approach in between the vessel segments.
So that surely will leave some scope for new hires then in
Denver. Surely, you would think, hopefully.
So outside of Norden, there also seems to be people moving around. Are there any trends here that are going to be emerging in the markets?
Yeah, I think so. So the Panamax team and Lena, they basically left because they received offers that they couldn't refuse, as far as I've been able to establish it. I understand that Lena is going to be a partner at BaltNav, you know, who wouldn't quit for a partnership. But these personnel changes, they also come at a time when there's renewed interest in the bulker operating model. And that includes the staff who have this very long-standing expertise in that business. I think we're at a really interesting moment in shipping history right now, where we have a broadly positive outlook for dry bulk, but you can't really order new buildings because there's such little visibility in the future fuel options. New building prices are quite high. Prices for secondhand vessels have come up a lot so far this year, and prospective buyers are perhaps not in the market like they were. So I think that means people are looking at renewed interest to operate as a way to make money from shipping without having to take that long risk that's involved in buying ships. So like I say, these staff who have all of this experience and have a good customer base, they are going to be in hot demand, I'm sure. Having said that, what also makes this a very interesting time is that actually a lot of bulk operators have had a very tricky first quarter. And last week in Copenhagen, I spent a lot of time talking with people about that. I think the coming earnings season is going to be pretty interesting when we start to see those numbers on paper.
Interesting then to see two shipping figures retiring or announcing a kind of semi-retirement this week. Is there going to be more?
Succession is a really interesting issue to watch right now. I think it's all pervasive across shipping right now. Basically, we have this layer of people reaching a certain age who are about to retire, who's going to succeed them. And a lot of these people, they also own the business from which they're retiring. And what will be the succession plan for ownership of that business? Added to that, I think we're also seeing a cultural shift where people simply don't want to work so hard for so long, especially after COVID, you know. So I wouldn't rule out also a few surprise early retirements in the future too.
And there's one other you wrote about, Union Bulk. Why did Anders Svarer leave?
Well, the reasons for his departure haven't been disclosed publicly, but I understand that he's not retiring and he hasn't left to join another company. So we'll see.
Ollie, thank you. Now, let's continue heading east and head to the shipbuilding yards. I recently hosted the Tradewinds Ship Owners Forum in Shanghai. It was a well-attended event, and there were representatives from the country's leading shipyards and from shipowners who have got shipbuilding orders at those yards. During one of the talks on the stage, we discussed the relationship between the owners and the yards in today's market, where order books are filling up and uncertainty over fuels and technologies have been causing some owners to seek a little bit of flexibility. Now, I'm not going to go into that too much here. You can find out all about that if you go to the Green Seas podcast of Tradewinds, where you can hear more from that yard and ship owner discussions. But here, however, is a clip from one of the panellists, Chang Qipeng, Deputy General Manager of Shanghai Weigaoqiao Shipbuilding, when I asked about overcapacity in Tier 1 yards and the reactivation and involvement of Tier 3 or Tier 4 yards.
It is a good question. Potentially, we are in a market, open market in China. So when the business of shipbuilding is good, somebody jump in, it can be happen. And I think it's happening now. But what is the extent to be happened, I don't know. But so far, I don't freeze too much about that. Because in this cycle, we see it's lots of difference between last cycle. Last cycle, China is need a lot of commodities, and that driven shipping business to be very hot. But this cycle, it's not really like that. And even some of the new investors, they are thinking to build a shipyard, but they need to be seriously thinking when they can build ships and what's the situation at the moment.
So it's about having the right sort of attitude, but you need the owners to place the orders then as well. And given the complexity of some of these vessel orders that you're going to have with all the decarbonisation, I'm going to hazard a guess that there's only initially certain shipping companies that will have the capability to go to the, with their order books, to go and order new fuels, ammonia or methanol. And they would want to go to the Tier 1, Tier 2 yards.
I think that will be a very difficult decision for the client, Most capable shipyards, they are the full order book, but for new shipyards, they may have slots available, but their capability is quite limited, which means, a very high risk level for the client. It depends if they will able to take that kind of level of risk.
Well, that was Chang Qipeng, Deputy General Manager of Shanghai Weigaoqiao Shipbuilding. Now, as I mentioned, the order book seems to be filling up this year after a long period of uncertainty that kept most of the yards relatively quiet and idle. Now, if you've been reading Tradewinds, you will have seen a significant uptick of orders from what we believe are cash-rich ship owners who need to spend some money. Tradewinds correspondent Lucy Hine has joined me now in our virtual studio to help explain what's going on. So Lucy, what can you tell me about the order books and why we see this sudden rush?
Hi Craig, yeah, I think it has been a busy first quarter on new buildings. Ship owners across all sectors have started the year with cash to spend. They've been looking at the best way to place that money. I must admit, I was wondering if they would spend it in the volumes they have. I was sort of thrown a bit by the ongoing disruption in the Panama Canal. We've seen the Red Sea and Suez attacks, and particularly high prices at yards, lack of berths, questions over decarbonisation. But disruption creates market opportunities in shipping, and the high prices don't seem to have deterred owners, and they haven't been shy in coming forward. In terms of what we've seen done, I think, the product tankers have been particularly active. Talking to someone this morning who described the LR2 new building order book for tankers as bonkers, because he felt that was completely overordered. A lot of Kamsarmax and Ultramax bulk has been done, and that's well overordered now, but probably more to come. Big sector in terms of LNG, we've seen over 46 orders, 45 orders there. I mean, obviously Qatar taking the bulk of those, but others creeping in there, and more to come in that sector as well this year. On the VLCCs, looking at those this morning, I think had it done, it's 46 ships being contracted now. That's double the order book from the end of 23. And over half of those have been done in the first quarter of this year, and at really strong prices of $130 million a pop. So that's, brave ordering there with, you've got to think that you'll need a firm charter with a strong rate there to support that kind of investment. You've also seen niche sectors getting a look into. There's been some liquefied CO2 carriers. I think they're up at 8 ships now. first sniff of ammonia fuel vessels coming in, and the VLACs, very large ammonia carriers, they're at 45. Now, I think people thought the ordering in that sector might stop, but that's continuing. And with, you know, just indication now that people are looking at larger ethane carriers, starting to make a showing there. I was just looking at, or talking to people rather, about the sentiment going into the second quarter. Just some of them reflecting a note of caution there, maybe a bit of correction creeping in. Comments that perhaps there's, you know, some of the owners have been slightly out of touch with reality, someone said. Talk of poisoning the well, perhaps, you know, over-ordering. But, you know, people are still sitting on cash, something of a febrile atmosphere out there. Talk of resales, very high secondhand values, you know, still a lot of hot pricing going on there. Really not quite sure what's going to happen in the second quarter, but I would expect interest to continue.
Do you think also that this is a case of history repeating itself? You know, we saw back in 2007, 2008, massive ordering, which a lot of owners subsequently regretted.
Yeah, I mean, I think you've seen that probably throughout your reporting life, and so have I, that, you know, there's this rush to shipyards and people overbuild, particularly in certain sectors, that, you know, when those take off. Talking to someone yesterday who was getting quite anxious about it, he said the whole new building atmosphere had a feel of 2008. People paying loads of money for ships, and he felt the whole thing, you know, could come tumbling down. But that said, people do seem to be cash rich. You've got the added factor of decarbonisation now, and people feel that they don't have that question mark hanging over them about which ship to order now, and feel confident to go ahead with whatever, you know, their preference is in terms of fueling. So I think that's another factor that's coming in.
So I guess there is that certainty over the regulatory landscape that gives them a little bit more confidence in what they're actually going to order then. But then that comes down to the yards having the experience of building vessels that have got these new fuel solutions and the fuel systems. And that was kind of reflected, I think, when I was at the Ship Owners Forum, where there were comments about reactivating of the Tier 3 and Tier 4 yards in China to, in some cases, supplement some of the activity on the Tier 1 yards. Do you think that we're going to see yards being reactivated, and what might that say about the quality of the vessels being built?
Yes, it is a question I've been asking. I think new building brokers feel there's only a certain amount of capacity that can realistically be reactivated, and yards have in the past proved reluctant just to do that sort of on the hope of more orders, and because they've been burnt before on that. But definitely you see China wanting to get experience of new types of ships, wanting to break into the larger sectors and the more specialist sectors. So I think you will see new players in China, as we have done on VLCCs and LNG carriers. And, you know, where they feel it will pay, you'll see a bit of action in Korea. But at the moment, yards are sitting comfortably, and I don't think they have a need to do, especially the Korean yards, don't have a need to do too much at the moment. They've got full order books and are probably sitting pretty with strong prices at the moment. It will change in the future, but let's see what this year brings.
Lucy Hine on the new building orders in China and South Korea as cash-rich ship owners get more bullish about their order books. Well, time's nearly up for this episode, and I've just got time for a summary of the other news that's grabbed our headlines this week with Andy Pearce on our news desk.
Thanks, Craig. I think the big story for us this week was the Union Maritime. That's the story on our front page. This is quite an unusual story in the sense that they're quite a private owner. They're quite a quiet company. But actually, our correspondent Irene Ang's done a wonderful job in terms of not only uncovering and getting them to talk about the reasons behind the deal, but actually quite some interesting detail in terms of the technology that's going into these LR2 tankers that they're ordering to really build towards a more sort of energy transition focus in their fleet. Also on the new building front, we've seen John Fredriksen go in with his first order for Newcastle Max Bulkers in more than half a decade. Now, Fredriksen's been really busy on the private front this year. We've seen him go in with VLCCs. He's done some really interesting deals in the offshore market as well. So, of course, as one of the world's most watched ship owners, to see him now going into China for some Newcastle Max Bulkers is certainly likely to catch some attention. And then I think a favourite story for me this week is our correspondent in Athens, Harry Papakristou, has done a really interesting breakdown of the first quarter sale and purchase activity. Now, what we've seen in the first quarter is that actually sale and purchase activity, particularly in dry bulk, has been at record levels, or levels we've certainly not seen for something approaching two decades. And Harry's done a really interesting breakdown of who's been spending the money, who's been buying, who's been selling. And that's definitely worth a look for our readers.
Well, that's it for this episode of the Tradewinds Wavelength podcast. We'll be back in a week with more insight into the news and events shaping the shipping and maritime industry. Remember to go to your favourite podcast platform and subscribe, and please share and talk about this podcast. And go to tradewindsnews.com where you can get more details on the stories covered in this episode. My name's Craig Eason, this is Tradewinds Wavelength. Until the next time, goodbye.